Hello, this is Justin Mason, and what you're about to hear is recordings from last weekend's Potapalooza 2024. This was a live stream event hosted over 2 days, 20 hours in total. And sometimes during this event, because so many different people are involved, the audio isn't quite what you would expect from a normal podcast. I hope you still enjoy the content, but I apologize if there is some choppiness or rough listening at points. Enjoy. Yancey pointed out all three panelists are wearing glasses and very sharp. I don't know if that's always the case, because we do have someone who wears glasses on the next panel that is not very sharp. So, but we'll get to him in a minute and the rest of that panel. We are raising money for Fantasy Cares through this Potapalooza live stream. So far, we have raised, as I update, we have raised over $2,300 this weekend. And that brings us up to $8,500 through TGFBI and Potapalooza. Really, really appreciate everybody who's been donating. Keep those donations coming in at donorbox.org/TGFBI. Every dollar you donate helps us give presents to kids, because Kennedy Karras donates a lot of presents for Toys for Tots, over tens of thousands of dollars every year, over 25 cities around America. A fantastic organization that I'm happy to be paired up with. And every dollar you donate gets your raffle ticket to win some of these amazing prizes, like the Reliever Recon, the Closer Monkey subscription that Greg was just talking about, plus signed jerseys, bobbleheads, subscriptions to other sites, just a ton of amazing things. But let's bring in our next panel, because we have a stacked panel. Speaking of those glasses, Paul Spohr is back. How you doing, my friend?
I'm well. How's it going?
It's going all right. Why don't you remind everybody where you can be reached on social media and plug everything you got going on?
You can find me on Twitter at Spore, on there a little bit. Not as much lately, but, with the season getting back going, I love reading the baseball stuff, trying to stay away from all the bots and crap. I got to be on there to see Lisa, breaking news like the Cody Bellinger news. I got to see what Lisa's up to and get her, takes and everything. So also, of course, at Fangraphs, fantasy editor, fangraphs.com/rotographs. We got the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, Justin and I doing our positional previews. And got our ranks up and everything. Like I promoted last time, my sleepers are coming. The busts are up. Everyone said, well, what about the busts? They're already up. That's why I didn't bring that up.
All right. Also joining us is Carlos Marcano, my friend. How are you doing?
All good, Justin. And you, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to meeting you in Florida in just a few days, right?
Oh, man, I wish, but I can't make it this year, Justin. I wish I can. But.
Man, I thought I saw you on the list. Now I'm all bummed out.
I'm participating in labor, but my friend Mark Northon will be there for me. So.
I know Mark.
Yeah.
He's a good dude.
Oh, he's amazing. He's the best high stakes player no one knows. So.
Oh, I know him. I've had him in a couple of my leagues, so I'm ready to go to battle against him. Want to remind everybody where you can reach on social media and plug everything you got going on?
Sure. Usual ramblings in Twitters at CA Marcano, and most of my stuff is in Baseball's Prospectus. I'm part of the fantasy baseball team over there. It's my second year, I believe so, and. I do my stuff with specs, with my metrics. If anyone is interested, can find it in my VO page in Twitter.
All right. Also joining us is James Giano. How you doing, my friend?
What's up, Justin? How you doing? Nice to meet you.
Are James and Carlos in the same room?
Honestly, it feels like it a little bit.
I'm glad it put them together. I'm it was a secret. Bring in the last person. Yeah. It doesn't separate them.
No, truthfully, I live on a very busy road in Brooklyn. So whenever I do stuff on like on the microphone, I flip my desk around so I'm facing the window and the wall's behind me, so I can block out all of the like bachata music and reggaeton nice. At my window.
I mean, I wouldn't mind that music being on there. I'd spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, a little distracting, but usually fun.
James, why don't you remind everybody where you can reach on social media and plug everything you got going on?
Everyone can find me at James_Schiano, like it is right there. I'm going to try to do some fantasy content somewhere this year. I was writing for Pitcherless for a few years. Going to just figure something out before the season, but otherwise the Mets Stub podcast, if anybody out there is a Mets fan or just likes to listen to Mets fans talk about the Mets or make fun of the Mets or talk about the Mets in general, just a fun podcast, good interviews, check out.
I know a good person who likes to make fun of the Mets, and that is someone named Eno Saris, who's joining us as well. How you doing, Eno?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Good to see you again.
Absolutely. Remind everyone where you can be reached and talk about all you've got going on, because I'm sure you got a bunch going on.
Enosarris on Twitter is the easiest place. I, too, have been sort of looking for a new home, but Blue Sky ain't it. So you'll find me on Twitter for now. Until something else takes off, I guess. The Rates and Barrels podcast is the easiest way to jump in, because it's free, and you can hear about all the different stuff I write on The Athletic from there, and jump in if you feel like you want to pay for it. So I have my ranks up this year. I did more blurbs than usual, so I did 75 blurbs and. Not as much as Nick Pollock, that curve breaker. like 8,000 words on like 700 pictures. Like, come on, dude. but yeah, my rankings are up with my stuff plus. My stuff plus metrics are up on Fangraphs with Paul over there. So lots of different ways you can find my stuff.
I'm going to call Nick Pollock right now while you guys are talking starting pitching and ask him to stop doing so much writing and develop a fantasy baseball social media app. So you guys talk about pitching and I'll go talk to him about that.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Well, gentlemen, it's great to speak with all of you. Let's get right into it. Let's make sure we use as much of this time as we can here because we got lots to get to. We're going to start with some general strategy talk and then get into some battles between some intriguing pitchers this year. Let's go around the table here and just start with general pitching strategy when you're in a fantasy league. Let's talk about like a 12-team standard setup 5x5 here, just so we're all on the same page and that can kind of relate, you know, across the board there. Let's start with you, Eno. Obviously, things can change when you're in a draft and you got to pivot. But generally going in, how do you like to approach starting pitcher? You jump in with aces early, you waiting on it, you leveraging your knowledge to get late players. Where do you usually go?
I think Strider is the Acuna of pitching, where there's actually a big jump between him and second place. So if I can get Strider, I'll get Strider. But if I can't get Strider, I think then there's a grouping of sort of 8 to 10. And I'm cool on sort of waiting and jumping in the last moment. This actually extends to 15 teamers too. Mm-hmm. Like, Logan Webb and Framber Valdez are really solid, boring-ish pitchers, but you know, the innings are probably there, the wins, you know, so like, I like them as number ones. If you went and got three bats first, you know, yep. Three or four bats, if it's a 10 teamer or 15 to 12 teamer. So I'm okay on waiting. If you can't get Strider,
How early on Strider, if I might ask you,
I think there's like six bats that I definitely want to have. Okay. In,
yeah.
You know, there's some real like sort of mid first bats. Round. I'll start jumping in on Strider.
That makes sense. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. And then
I can't take Strider over Julio Rodriguez. Or
like, no, there's just something. Like, I like Strider too. I'm with you on having the split with them. I probably have Cole maybe a little bit closer, but it's definitely Strider with a bullet at number one. But there's just so many bats up there that I cannot pass up. What about as you move to the middle? Do you like to live in that, say, SP 15 to 40 range? Or if you get your ace up front, do you bypass that and then start playing a lot more in the middle, or what I used to call the glob, which is, you know, a giant group that usually ranges, depending on where you start, at like 45 to 80 or 90?
Yeah, I think 30 is actually the number I'm trying to get to. I'm trying to get as many top 30 guys as I want, as I can get, especially since I waited. So I've been leaving drafts with like three out of the top 30, which no matter how deep your league is, that you got to be feel good about having three in the top 30.
Absolutely.
So, and then I think the glob, yeah, the glob starts somewhere around 40 or 50. And, you know, once it gets to that, I'll wait again. And in 12 teamers, I'll end with as much upside as possible because I feel like the wire will produce the Merrill Kellys of the world. I better just take my shots and go full YOLO at the end of the draft. And if it doesn't work out, that guy's off my team in 2 weeks anyway.
Totally agree, because you can change, you can pivot there. James, what's your approach when you're looking at your general pitching strategy coming into a standard league?
A lot of agreement with Eno, where I think that generally, like this year especially, Strider, it's just what he can do strikeouts-wise and probably win-wise with that Braves team. I don't think anybody in the league can match it. But then there's just this glut of guys, basically 2 through almost 20, that I feel can wind up being kind of similar between injury risk or just you're losing a category, whether it be whip or strikeouts or something. So I love, whether I get Strider or not, to just super attack like the SP 20 to 30 range. Guys like Logan Gilbert, Yuri Perez, Bobby Miller, Grayson Rodriguez for the upside. Musgrove is sitting there and just, he has all the makings of being like a, could be a top 15 pitcher this year. He was last year in between the two awful injuries that kind of shortened his season. And then again, if it's 12 team, like, you know, said, like there's so many options to stream. Like you take your upside shots, you take the young guys, and then it's just, there's so many bad teams in baseball right now. And there's just so many opportunities to hunt games in Oakland, in Miami, in either of the central divisions besides
even in Chicago, like guaranteed rates at a good hitter's park, but I'll still take a lot of pitchers against that garbage lineup. So I'm totally with you there.
Not afraid of Nicky Lopez?
I'm really not. I know that sounds crazy. Carlos. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Finish up, James.
No, it's because that team is so bad that I almost think they're just going to be sunk down with everything. But then there's even just that tier of like that, like the glob you guys are saying, where like, do I want like Dylan Cease or Tanner Bibee, or like, would I rather take the shot on like the Josh Young or like the Torkelson to give me that, like someone who could be like a true like first five round contributor besides a pitcher who like has some flaws, but also there's probably a guy just as good like 50, 75 picks later.
Yeah, especially if you don't really see a big comeback for Cease, you can definitely replicate his profile later, even if it's not at that same volume. Carlos, you sweeping it where you got Strider number one big and then you kind of living in that top 20 range, or do you have a different approach at all?
I'm usually a hitter heavy guy at the beginning, so I tend to pass pitchers on the first couple of rounds and then go move my way up to whatever is around. I like the idea of having Logan Webb as an SP1, as Eno mentioned, and his ADP is really, really sweet, the way it's moving around lately. And I think there's plenty of good choices around 20 to SP30, so you can still skip the first couple of rounds and get some good guys.
Absolutely. There's a lot of different ways to approach it too with pitching, and that's kind of the beauty of pitching. Let's talk top 10 here. Now, you guys might have looked at ADP a little bit differently, so I'm going to give you the top 10 names because we're going to ask who's most likely to bust within the top 10. And we're not talking injury necessarily, because that could literally happen to anybody. We're talking about putting up a full season, which is at least 162 innings, so they qualify for the ERA title, and they just come in with some 4-something ERA pretty much, and like a, you know, maybe 130 whip. So it's Spencer Strider, Garrett Cole, Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler, Kevin Gausman, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Pablo Lopez, Zach Gallen, and Tyler Glasnow. If you're on like Yamamoto or Skubal and Nola, because they're like right there and you looked at ADP a little bit differently than me, that's totally fine. But let's start with you on this one, Carlos. Who's your biggest potential bust here that you're trying to avoid?
I'm taking Gallen. I think the guy took a small step backward in every single ERA estimator last season. I mean, FIP, Sierra, DRA, XERA, each one of them, especially in PCRA, which is one I love a lot because it's based on contact. He had a big increase there. And also, this happened while he faced like a third of his starts, he faced the 10 last teams in terms of hitting capabilities during the year. So that caught my attention. That's a big red flag over there. his stuff and location plus numbers are still above average, but it, they took also a step backwards there. The fastball, it was down at a complete 1 mile per hour less than the previous year. So as things start piling up, there is a trend there that I don't like a lot. So it's possible that he will have a big regress for this year.
I could certainly see it. He also had the big innings total too. And you never know coming off a big playoff, you know, how a guy's going to respond. You know, Eno and I, way back in the day before everyone started hating him in the booth, had John Smoltz on our podcast. This was back when he was on the desk and everyone loved him. And we talked to him about that. And he said that those counted as like a 1.5. You should really be looking at it at a playoff inning. If you're kind of calculating what it does to a pitcher's arm, you should probably put like a 1.5 accelerator on it. And I've heard that repeated from other guys. Verlander's talked about that. And so you're talking 243 regular with the accelerator. All of a sudden you're thinking like 260 plus there for Gallen, and we just don't know how he's going to respond to that. Maybe he's fine, but we don't know. So I understand that pick there with Gallen as a bust. You know, what about you, your top 10 bust here that you're trying to stay away from?
I love the dude. He's, you know, he's a character, he's nice, you know, he's, his story has been great. But Kevin Gausman has two pitches, and those two pitches, that makes him really dependent on his fastball velocity in my mind, because what you see, if you look at the aging trends for aging curves for pitchers, for starters and relievers, starters are traditionally lose velo about the same as relievers, but their strikeout rate stays higher. Relievers, as they age and they lose velo, their strikeout rate just goes in the tank. And my theory on why that is that starters have more pitches, so they're not as dependent on their fastball velocity. They can mix it up. They can do the old pitcher strategy of throwing the slider 40% of the time, or doing this or doing that. But Gausman's maxed out all that stuff. He can't really throw the splitter anymore, you know? And in terms of learning a new pitch, I've been waiting a long time for him to learn a breaking ball. And
absolutely.
I think every year he's like, this is a good breaking ball. And I'm like, no, Kevin, it's not.
Stop, Kevin. It's not.
It never is. So that just makes me nervous. You know, most of the guys that you see around him have larger arsenals. That just makes me trust them a little better.
Yeah, and that, you know, the 2 years with the BABIP, and again, I bring this up a lot on our podcast, Sleeper and the Buzz. He had like a 40-point drop in BABIP, which normally you'd be like, that's amazing. And he was still third worst because he was so bad the year before at 363 and then dropped it to 341.
Yeah, I did really break up. That's another thing is that it's something that Alex Chamberlain has been really researching, is how much pitchers can control the ball in play. I know this is a thing that's been researched for a really long time. And even Alex, I don't think, would say that they control it a lot. So we're trying to really parse a little bit of control they might have. But people that control, that look for this quality of contact, seem to think that Kevin Gausman allows hard contact and that he's deserved a lot of those batting average and balls in play.
And then you got it on the turf, kind of making it worse. I said 341, by the way, 321 would be the 40-plus point drop there. And James, wrap it up. Top 10 busts. We got Gausman and Gallen so far. You doubling up on one of those or going elsewhere?
Yeah, I had both my notes for this prompt was Gausman and Gallen. So yeah, that, I think it is funny, just to go, I'll fill in the cracks a little bit, some which you guys didn't mention, but Gallen actually talked in spring training, I think last week, about purposefully dialing back his workload this year because of the playoff inning. So I think just hearing him say that in February, and we've known he's been pitching for, I think, 2 years now in the partially torn UCL, and he's a bit of an undersized pitcher just in general. He's a little bit, he's kind of slight. He's got the little skinny Zach Gallen shoulders. I think that there's definitely concern that he's going to get skipped. Maybe he's going to have a couple more 4 or 5 inning appearances in the 6-7 he was used to, especially as that team was grinding down the stretch through September and August to try and make it to the playoffs. So I feel like there's going to be just a step back there from workload, which will take him out of the top 10. And Gausman, just like everything, you know, said, has never been the third pitch. We're going on years of just fastballs down the middle that get pelted. Last year was the highest walk rate since his metamorphosis, the worst quality of contact since his metamorphosis, and just division sucks. The outfield defense is still good, which helps him because it's just uber fly ball pitcher, but just seeing him being drafted ahead of like Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Pablo Lopez, all have better parks, all have better schedules, all have more weapons, all have better commands. It just doesn't really make sense right now for him as the SP6 ahead of those guys.
Yeah, and as I kind of like battle test my rankings in the drafts I've been in, I never land on either of them, which I think means it's time to move them down a little bit. You know, I kind of had them where the consensus was going, and if I'm not doing that, I don't really want to rank them there. James, let's stay with you for this next one here. Who's your favorite starting pitcher going after pick 300? So we're getting into the gambles here. Who do you like to lean on, and you're putting on multiple teams?
There's something to me about right now Sawyer Gibson Long that I can't forget about. And well, I think that's
a Tigers fan.
Yeah. I feel like if he was a bigger prospect or just wasn't this weird lanky dude with long hair and a mustache or threw 96 instead of 93 with the results he got down the stretch last year, he'd have helium like out the wazoo. But that Tigers rotation is so feeble in front of him. I think he is SP7 that rotation right now, even going into spring training with the groin injury they talked about last week. But yeah. Maeda, Skubal, Flaherty, Mize, Manning, there's no way even three of those guys, I feel like, make it to May 15th as
it's a long starters. Season too.
Yeah. And Gibson got to 120 innings at all levels last year. And that stretch at the end, he was so good with the Tigers. He had 30% strikeout rate, 20% K minus walk. It was only about 50 batted balls, but the quality of contact was impeccable. I'm looking at young pitchers. I love the fact that he has three weapons against hitters from each side of the plate. Like the slider is the bulk pitch, which had great results last year against hitters both sides of the plate. Hit my mic. Sinker is great. He's not scared to throw the fastball on top of the zone. The changeup is a weapon that Nick Pollock is obsessed with, and he's getting me obsessed with it too because of how good it looks. It's just the defense is going to be good. The park is going to be good. You know, I know the new stuff plus update kind of nerfed him from went from 113 to a 99, but I just watching him pitch, there's so many weapons. He has so many ways to get hitters both sides out. And the situation's so good that I love leaving drafts with him as one of the last guys. Great guy to have in DCs too.
And you know, barring a couple big injuries for the Tigers in spring, which I obviously don't hope happens as a fan of the team, I don't see a skyrocket in his price. So you can get Sawyer Gibson Long really cheap. You know, if you're still doing drafting holds with the 50 rounds, he's a great guy to put on there because you're really hoping to kind of get him maybe going in June. And he could easily, like you said, he's seventh man because Mize is the first man up right now behind the five that they got penciled in. But there is so much scariness. Even Skubal, who I'm very, very excited about, you know, he's coming off an 80-inning season. And then you got Flaherty, Maeda with their injuries. Matt Manning couldn't strike any of us out. And Reese Olson, we don't really know what's going on with him. And then Mize, of course, returning from TJ. So there's an avenue there for Sawyer Gibson Long. Been hearing him talked about a lot here on Potapalooza. And as a Tigers fan, it juices me up because, you know, you always want to check yourself that you're overrating a team favorite. But hearing all the smart people talk about him, I'm like, yes, okay, Sawyer Gibson Long is a real thing here, and I'm excited about him. Carlos, let's jump to you. Favorite starting pitcher going after pick 300?
Well, I'm shooting for the moon here because this is someone that will probably raise a few eyebrows, but it's actually Ranger Suarez. And
that. Justin's going to like that too.
It is a long shot. Let's start there, of course. But I'm looking the way I see it is that there is a lot of upside there. Everybody seems to be worried about Suarez's health, but except the Phillies. The Phillies are keeping him in his rotation, and it looks like they are counting on him. And they are the people that are closer to him than us, right? So they might be know a thing or two. He was uneven last year, very, very uneven, but he also had a really difficult injury, that strained elbow injury, which of course is a concern moving forward on, but he still pitched 120 innings, and then he had that crazy run in the playoffs, right? 193 RA, 0.8 WHIP, and 19 Ks in 18 innings pitch, and his FIP and Sierra numbers were like crazy good for the he finished the year with a bang, and his velo was a little bit better by the end of the year. It's still not great, but he started to look a little bit like 2021 vintage Suarez, you know. So I love the raw potential. It's a matter of the things align and click the right way for him in 2024. He could be for something, you know.
Yeah, I still like Ranger Suarez. He's a guy that I've always had some interest in. You know, I kind of benefited from that big run that he had coming out of the bullpen a couple years ago. Yeah. You know, he took advantage. Obviously, he had a really nice schedule there too. But, you know, when you get that run from somebody, maybe helps you win a league or secure a money spot, you feel a little bit better about them, right? So I've always kind of rooted for him. Even though it's unrelated, real quick, because I saw it in the chat, since we are talking Phillies, can I get a quick thought from everybody on Christopher Sanchez, who's also in that Phillies rotation there? Carlos, can we start with you real quick?
Oh, sure. Well, I had him for our next
point. Then you skip your thoughts on him.
Okay.
And we'll bring it up when you bring him up. Sorry about that. But I just didn't want to ignore that question there because I do love Christopher Sanchez. So let's continue on with the post-300 guys here. Eno, who's your guy?
He's kind of boring, but he's in a major league rotation for a good team in a good pitcher's park and should get some wins. So that alone makes him interesting. Dean Kramer is also interesting just because he has, 4 or 5 pitches. None of them is a really great one. You know, he might be lacking an out pitch. That would be why it doesn't work out.
Yeah. It's a kitchen sink approach though, right?
Yeah.
He just throws everything at you.
He commands them well. The fastball, the four-seam fastball and the cutter are his bread and butter. But by the end of the season, he's throwing his curve harder, and I hear that he's working on a splitter. You know, the splitter in this case wouldn't be something that he has to depend on for strikes. And so something that he could throw in 2-strike counts would be better than his current changeup, which I think is maybe turfable. But even if the splitter doesn't work out, just improving that curveball to the point where he can be 4-seam sinker, cutter, curve, I think that's enough of a wide enough arsenal, given the command he has, given these other things. Sometimes we forget about, you know, I think this is a reverse Graham Ashcraft. You know, last year I was kind of into Graham Ashcraft because the stuff plus was so good, but I forgot, you know, team's not going to give him wins. Ballpark's not going to be forgiving. He has 2 pitches and each of those pitches is only good against one hand. Mm-hmm. I think James was bringing up, like, you know, having weapons against both hands is super important because, you know, you're kind of a different pitcher against each handedness.
That was a great call out. And that Ashcraft struggled with that. He finally found some footing down the stretch. But if you took a lot of that beating, most of the teams that drafted Graham Ashcraft never got the goodness because they long cut him.
Yeah.
And that just adds the frustration, right? It's one thing, you know, when a guy burns you early on and you stick with him, if it's like a higher end pick, but if it's one of these gamble picks and you cut him and then he goes on to do well, oh God, that's so frustrating. But I like the Kramer call out because he's got a chance now to pitch because of both the Bradish and Means injuries. Both are going to start on the IL. The Bradish injury is much more scary to me than the Means one, but both are problematic. And in that ballpark, I know that those of us who are older, it still feels weird to say that Camden Yards is a great place to pitch. Place
you played your hitters.
That's a place where you would take the most mediocre hitter in the summer and just watch him hit bombs all over the place. But now with that crazy wall, I'll throw a Dean Kramer out there. So I like that call out for sure. All right, let's continue on. Let's stick with you here, Eno. Who's the starting pitcher you're targeting in every draft? I got to get this guy. We know Carlos is, by the way, but let's get to yours first.
I mean, I keep trying to get Bobby Miller, but I just got my first share of him. And, you know, it's one of those things that, like, yeah, because I just think Bobby has everything he needs, stuff and command and a wide arsenal and a team behind him that'll give him wins and just everything, you know. You know, it's just tough when you're in drafts because there's like a whole different slice of the pool that's available to you if you're on the front end or the back end of a draft.
Yep.
I don't have a great answer for you, actually.
That's okay.
I've ended up with a fair amount of Seth Lugo, and the reason why is not very exciting. It's just that I have him like sort of 10 picks above or 10 rankings above a lot of people, still sort of have him around 50. It's not that exciting, but it's like I usually end up pairing Seth Lugo with one of these more YOLO-y picks that people take later in the draft. And my reasoning is, hey, I just took 2 pitchers, 1 for innings, 1 for upside. You know, who knows which one of them works out, but at least I feel better that if the guy that I picked for upside doesn't work out, I have, you know, I think 140 pretty good innings from Seth Lugo this coming season.
Yeah, I definitely like that. And it is harder to kind of have somebody at the top end that you're targeting in every draft, like a Bobby Miller, because like you said, you're so at the mercy of your draft spot. Like, you know, I'm all about getting my guys. I will ignore ADP, but you got to have some limits on it. And you can't just take them in the 3rd round every draft and just get Bobby Miller every single draft that way. So it is hard when you're trying to target one of the higher end guys, but he is awesome. I think he's an ace in the making. Very excited about him. And of course has amazing team support. James, starting pitcher you're targeting in every draft if you can get him.
Similar to what Nino was just saying, I love the Hunters, both Brown and Green, but I was just in a 12 teamer where I took a lot of these pitchers early in that 20 to 30 range, like we talked about, and I was just lacking outfield and power. So I had to just spam outfielders in the middle of the round. I wound up just missing both of them because no one made it back. But in terms of later in the draft, I always want to get one piece of this Rays rotation. I think that we say it every year, but it's just like the Rays are able to do something with starting pitching, at least in terms of results for our game here that other teams can't. Like year by year, ERA from their starters, last year, fourth, 2022, third, 2021, 14th, their worst in the decade, 2027, 2019, fourth. Like whoever's going to be pitching the bulk of these innings for the Rays, I know I think last year even Taj Bradley might have been second or third on the team in starting pitcher innings at about 110. So you kind of have to find the guy who's the guy. But it feels to me like this year that could really be Pepiot or Savali, where it's just they were so intentional about going after both of these guys, trading what in terms of their roster with very legitimate assets in Manzardo and Glasnow to bring in these pitchers. And they definitely see something. Savali, going to keep talking about pitch mixes against handedness, but he has legit five pitch mix against the righties and just so many of the colors and curveballs, which is exactly what they did with Eflin last year against the lefties. And it's just like they saw how it worked. The fastballs are similar. And Savali got much more comfortable with the slider too as the year went on, especially when those last 2 months with the Rays. I just think that what they were able to do with him in such a short period of time, I know the ERA and the whip are out of control, but the strikeout rate is very encouraging. And just a full off season of installing all of these things with him, it's just he's always been a guy who's felt like he's had such pitchability, which seems like a direction the Rays are going, especially on the other side of the Boz and Bradley, who are just going to throw fastballs at you, and we need other stuff. And then Pepiot, there's another nugget from Nick Pollock where he has this great riding fastball, but I think the Dodgers as an organization don't really put riding fastballs in the top of the zone. I've always kind of hypothesized is because just in their park and because of how good their team is, they're just so hyperly afraid of home runs, where they know if they keep a ball in the yard more often than most teams, they're just going to beat every other team. So why risk the high fastball for where it's a little bit of mistake is gone? Just throw it low. If it's a sinking line drive, take the single. We'll score more runs than you. We really don't care about this. But just more of those fastballs up in the zone.
That makes sense when you look at how they build their bullpen.
Definitely. Yep. And exactly. And just knowing they have such an advantage in all 162 games they play, which is just that's just part of what it is, that they have that strength, they can do that. But the way the slider flashed the end of the year, the changeups plus, if that fastball gets high and in a park in Tampa Bay where it's much harder to hit home runs, I think that he could be a guy who's like a 150 innings, 3.8 ERA, 25% strikeout rate, which at the price he's going at would be just a massive coup.
Yeah, I totally agree there. I love Pepiot and Savali. I've been on Savali's train since Cleveland. You talk about that pitchability. I've always felt like there's another level there. And Cleveland does a great job with pitching development. Great. Don't get me wrong. But Tampa Bay might be tapping into it. We saw that big strikeout rate. And it didn't come with results, so the price isn't sky high on Savali, which I really like.
Which is also funny because he had great results with Cleveland, just not with the strikeouts, which he's had on and off for years. Totally like
reverse.
So at the end of the year, you still see the low ERA and an inflated strikeout rate. You're like, oh, this is a good guy.
Yeah. And if he can stay healthy, I think, you know, they're not going to ever push anybody really. They don't push guys to be 190 or anything. But I think Savali could be that 150, 160 this year, a sort of workhorse for them. And I put workhorse in quotes because, you know, that's not crazy volume. But for Tampa Bay, it is. Carlos, talk to us about Christopher Sanchez from the Phillies. I'm a big fan.
Oh, there's a lot to love from this kid. He was like one of the nicest surprises later last year. And I mean, he put some Kirby-esque numbers with that 4% walk rate that it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I'm not expecting him to repeat that 4%, but even if it gets twice as bad, it's going to be league average.
So, yeah, exactly.
So that there's just so much upside there. And the ground ball rate is just sweet. So you got that combination of a guy that walks very few batters. He keeps the ball on the ground. And while his stuff numbers are not, you know, crazy, but he has that sweet slider that's like, I don't know, 120 something stuff plus. And he keeps the location of his slider and his sinker nice. I mean, the kid has a lot of upside. So I can't get enough of him in everywhere.
I'm totally with you. Christopher Sanchez was one of my big second half breakout picks. Did well down the stretch. I'm expecting more this year. Again, since it was a question in the chat from PJ, let me get a quick thought on Sanchez from both you, James, and Eno. James, you first. What do you think about Sanchez?
I love Sanchez. Just a guy who's going to get copious amounts of ground ball in a hitter's ballpark. He has a funky arm slot with the sinker and the slider as well. And it's just he's just a fun pitcher. And he kind of has that craftiness you want from a young sinker slider guy. And he's also, weirdly, I don't know if I remember this incorrectly, but didn't he also transition with the Phillies from bullpen to rotation, similar way that Suarez did? I could be wrong about that, but yeah.
We started to kind of see them dabbling with starting him in 2022. And then this year they kind of turned him loose as a rotation guy. And he really showed out. You know, 99 innings, not a huge sample, but there's lots to like there with Sanchez too.
Yeah, seeing him as a Mets fan, seeing him up close a lot, and just seeing my team hit choppers against him for six straight innings, it's just enraging. And it's just having that capability. And like, there's so much more now, I think, that about adding like a strikeout rate to a ground ball rate, because you know that contact's really not going to hurt you in the long run. And in terms of the whole league, like, he's going to be near the top of that, which is just a skill that you want to have.
Totally agree. And I'm a sucker for younger guys with changeups. And he's not super young. He's going to be age 27 this year, but he's young in terms of his career, in that he just has 152 major league innings. Eno, you co-signing the Christopher Sanchez love fest that we're having here?
Yeah, he was one of the largest risers when we updated Stuff Plus. He now has, I think, maybe the best changeup among starting pitchers by Stuff Plus. So, you know, that was a big change in the model. The only thing that bothers me is that he's a lefty that doesn't throw a cutter or a four-seam. And so he has to throw these sinkers to right-handed hitters all the time. And I'm just not sure... the question is the command good enough that he can just do that and succeed anyway? Yeah. Or are we going to hear about a cutter or a four seam, you know, this spring that, you know, keeps righties honest? He needs to have something he can throw inside to righties, or just, you know, something that's not a sinker. It's just really, really hard to get by throwing a sinker to opposite handed guys.
Exactly. And it explains the homers right now. And that is kind of the big hurdle for Sanchez. 15 homers against righties, just one against lefties. Big discrepancy in plate appearances too, but even still, it's a huge home run rate against righties that he needs to kind of figure out. Thankfully, with that walk rate though, he doesn't, they're solos a lot of the time, right? Mm-hmm. He keeps the bases clean. So he's going to give up those solos. But if he can fix that, if he gets that cutter or four seamer, watch out. I think Sanchez could really skyrocket. So thank you for the question there, PJ. I just took that one because he's a favorite of mine. Maybe we'll get some questions later. But let's get into some of these would you rathers. I've never heard this. I made up would you rather completely from my own brain. I've never heard that on a podcast. That's never been a segment anywhere. That's directly from Spore's brain here. But would you rather... I truly am a visionary. Let's start with Carlos here. Would you rather Tarek Skubal or Yoshinobu Yamamoto?
Well, while I'm a sucker for Skubal, I'm leaning Yamamoto here, and it's because of a matter of, you know, this is a guy that he has thrown at least 170 innings in the last three seasons back in Japan. And it's a different league, but 170 innings are the same anywhere in the world, you know, in terms of the amount of innings they relate to. So I love Skubal. I don't have anything against him, but they are very, equally priced. So I would go with the guy that has, you know, the track record of keeping himself on the field more.
Totally understand that there with Yamamoto, and you bring up the volume there. You know, even if he has some struggles, he's going to pitch the innings. They're paying him $1 billion. They're going to let him pitch. So I can totally see that as a big edge over Skubal. Eno, Skubal or Yamamoto?
I'm taking Yamamoto. I don't know. I think that the Skubal's health history is one that people seem to forget about.
That's totally understandable. I mean, again, 80 innings last year. And like we just said, Yamamoto, .170 consistently. James, you sweeping it?
Yeah, sweep. I think Yamamoto by probably a better margin than what the ADP is telling us right now. The projections are in love with Skubal, and I think it's fair because he's truly disgusting. But most of the 80 innings last year, I think like five of his last seven starts were Oakland, LA, Royals, White Sox twice, Cleveland. It's just, I think that he was inflated by a small sample against pretty awful competition, and the projections are probably a little high on him for that reason.
Yeah, it's like again, you know, I'm a Tigers fan. I talk about that. I do love him, but when I see where everything's at with him and the excitement is like, ooh, that's maybe a little too spicy for me. I got to be careful with that. I have him ranked pretty high too, but Yamamoto, he just looks like the real deal. Obviously, we'll see how he transitions. A lot of excitement with him. James, let's stay with you for this next one. This is a really interesting battle. Aaron Nola, you know, kind of your workhorse, going to punch the ticket every 5 days versus Freddie Peralta, who spiked a little innings cap this year, 160-something, huge down the stretch, but we haven't really seen big volume out of him. Where do you go between Nola and Peralta?
When I went into this, I was just Nola far and away, and I thought so, but then I looked at something a little deeper. I know Nola's always going to have the innings. I say always. He's not, probably not always going to have the innings. Someday he probably won't have the innings. But
yeah, Father Time will eventually win.
It's big. Last year was Freddie Peralta's career high in innings, 165. Nola averages about 40 more per season. It's hard to make that up, but something about Peralta that at first I didn't like, and then I wound up liking as I look more into it. He had his career high fastball, average fastball velocity last year, got over 94, and he's always had great life on that fastball. It was kind of the thing that carried him to the rotation before the slider and then the changeup really got going, but it tailed in September. Usually when a guy's velocity tails in September, I don't like the shape of that season, so I'll probably avoid them the next year, but when his velocity tailed in September, and this might have been a function of the teams he was facing, it was only September, so about 5-6 starts, but it was the first month of Freddie Peralta's entire career that he threw more changeups than sliders. So maybe the lineups were just being stacked against him with lefties, but the first time he's ever done that, and in that month, 33 strikeouts and one walk in total, which wow, for any pitcher, especially Freddie Peralta, to have one walk in a month is pretty special and unique. And there's also this weird emotional factor, I think, with the Brewers, especially Peralta this year, where he's always been kind of the little brother in that rotation. Suddenly mm-hmm. a team that's used to winning, a team that's used to pitching well and leaning out pitching and defense, like he's suddenly the guy. And I think that the team has a chip on their shoulder with the way the council hit situation was handled, Burns being traded in the eve of spring training. There's a lot of good baseball players in that team, a lot of guys who are accustomed to winning. Like this is something that's not really a part of fantasy context discussion. There's no data to back this up, but there's a world where he just kind of puts the whole thing on his back and he's like, I'm going to be the ace, I'm going to be the guy. And there probably is a peak season in Freddie Peralta that we haven't really seen yet. A lot of that could be the mentals and a lot of that could be the changeup.
Yeah, you know, we finally saw him take the 30 turns last year with Peralta. Could he do that this year, expanding the innings per and then pushing up like 180 and not having the struggle month early on so that he crushes that 386 ERA? Wouldn't surprise me. The 112 whip was really standout last year. Carlos, Nola versus Peralta, where do you stand between these two?
I'm also going with Peralta here. I'm just going to add that for the past couple of seasons, the only qualified pitchers that they have a K minus walk percentage similar to Peralta are Strider, Otani, Gosman, Woodruff, Cole, Scherzer, Nola, right? And Rodon. So there's a really good group to be in.
That's
right?
Amazing company.
Yeah, but the thing is that Peralta is entering his 27th years old season. It's a guy that it's in his prime completely, and he's also induces softer contact than Nola, so I'm taking Freddie before Nola every time.
Eno, sweeping?
The only thing that gives me pause is like, to some extent, the deeper your league is, the more you just want to buy innings.
True. And I could see that distinction here where like 10, 12, it's Peralta, and then as you move into the 15 or NL only, maybe you push toward Nola. Is that like,
imagine
is that
having
a
30 team league? I think you'd want Nola maybe.
I can see that.
Like, I need a pitcher. I need, like, how am I going to get in this 30 team league? How am I going to get to my 1,000 innings or whatever that I need out of my starting pitching? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to just have 200 of them in the hand and not be behind everybody on innings. So that's the only caveat I have. For most of us though, I think it's got to be Peralta because Nola's volume, the shallower your league is, the more it can be a ballast. It can be bad for you. So Nola in two of the last three seasons has been worse than the 50th ranked starting pitcher at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And it's like because of the volume, like it's just like a lot of average to below average volume where you're just like, and then it's Aaron friggin Nola. So like you're in this 12 teamer being like, hey, he's going to turn it around. I just saw.
You just stick just with him. Yeah,
pitching.
You're not going to cut him.
Like, you know, he's got this curveball. Like, it's gonna. It's just a little bad stretch. Or he's doing the cutter. He's throwing the cutter. I don't know. There's so many ways you can tell yourself to keep Aaron Nola on your team, and then you look up and you're like, damn, I just kept the 58th best starting pitcher on my roster
and just all let season him long. Bludgeon you every fifth day with these mediocre starts. James, did you have something on that?
Yeah, it's kind of like when you look at Nola. As good as he is and as well respected as he is, when the Braves come to town and you're a 12 team league, is he in your lineup? Like, there's a good chance he's not. And then you're going to pass on a guy who could be like top 10 pitcher with upside. Like, it's hard to.
Yeah, totally understand that. And it's a great point to bring up there. So, you know, I'm kind of keeping some notes here on who y'all are picking. I put Eno, took Peralta, but with the deep league caveat to at least consider Nola, which I totally get. But in those shallower formats, I think you got to go Peralta, because what if he puts up the 180, 190?
You know,
then all of a sudden that innings gap is closed a little bit, and the skills per are just, in favor of Peralta for sure. All right, this one's my favorite. I love these two. These are the next two aces of baseball, as far as I'm concerned. One AL, one NL. Eno, let's stick with you here. Grayson Rodriguez versus Bobby Miller.
No.
I think I know where you're at, but they're both amazing. Who you got?
God, I love them. Ever since Grayson Rodriguez turfed that stupid cutter he was throwing.
Yep.
He's looked more like the Grayson Rodriguez that's come up. And in his favor are like traditional stats. Like, his strikeout rate was much better than Bobby Miller's last year. And
we haven't seen Miller take the leap with his K's, but a lot of us believe that it's there.
I mean, it was there in the minors. I think Bobby Miller's arsenal is wider, and they both throw 98. They both have an out pitch. They both have good command, but I think Bobby Miller's arsenal is wider, and I don't know what the question is, now this year or for life or whatever.
It's just this year, so if you want to give the caveat that maybe you take Grayson in a dynasty league, people can note that, but it seems
I think it all leans towards Bobby.
Okay, I'm with you there, and again, it's really difficult because I see these two as like ALNL Spider-Man memeing, because I think they are the next aces of baseball. James, Grayson versus Bobby Miller, it's a difficult decision. Where do you come out?
It is like picking between kids if I had them, but the only thing that points me to Grayson, I think, is the park, because I'm happy you said that about the K rate, because Eve Grayson made the adjustment last year and he was just nasty nails the whole second half after he got rid of the cutter, but his strikeout rate was about, I think, 24.6%, where Bobby Miller's on the year was 23.6%. So even though it felt like, and this whole thing about Bobby Miller's strikeout rate has kind of gone crazy, it's like it was 1 percentage point lower than Grayson Rodriguez's. So if things just work a little bit better, that 1 percentage point of strikeout rate is meaningless, I think, in the scheme of things. And if it clicks for Miller, he could be one of the five best pitchers in baseball. I think Grayson probably could too, and the park is such a big deal, but there's something about Bobby Miller guessing 99 for 90 straight pitches. I can't look away from.
Yeah. I also wonder if the Orioles would just let him pitch more innings.
That is a big question too, both teams have designs on October, right? They might be playing that San Antonio Spurs load management game.
Yeah, and they're playing. I need a new
reference, by the way, because the Spurs aren't even good anymore. But I think of Popovich kind of bringing that into the league, and they could both maybe be a little bit limited down the stretch. So both might be a little difficult in the head to head. I'm not saying I wouldn't draft them. I'm taking them everywhere I can, as many shares as I can. But I wonder if maybe Grayson and Miller get a little bit of slowdown down the stretch just to protect them for October, where their starts are more 4 or 5 innings instead of the 6 or 7 that they can both do.
Or I bet they won't have many 2-start weeks this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Let them sit out that second start, start Monday, but not start that Sunday as well. So I could definitely see something like that. Carlos, you going to sweep it for Miller, or are you going to jump in for Grayson?
I'm gonna go.
James with Miller. Said, James kind of took Grayson.
I thought he started Grayson and then shifted to Miller.
I think Miller's just better, but I think just Grayson probably has a better fantasy season. Like, it's probably 30
so
more.
So now you're splitting it there. My fault there. Now you're splitting it, Carlos. Where are you gonna who wins this one then, Grayson or Miller?
Oh, I'm leaning Miller. And it's not because I see it, a huge difference, because if you look at their profiles, it's like twin brothers. And in a lot of ways, it only Miller induces a little bit more of softer contact, but we know that's not precisely the best thing to lean on to decide, because it's not fully dependable on the pitcher. So, but I'm leaning with the guy that is in the team with 100 plus wins guaranteed for fantasy, you know, purposes. So that would be my. I mean, the Baltimore is gonna be great, but not Dodgers great. So I'm leaning with the guy in the winningest team.
That's totally understandable. We got 10 minutes left. We got a bunch of these, so I'm going to skip this next one, Lizardo versus Eflin. It's an interesting one, but I want to make sure we get to some of these later ones for some of our deeper league folks. But let's go with Tanner Bibee and Cole Reagans. So let's stay with you here on this one, Carlos, and start between Bibee and Reagans. Their ADPs are right next to each other. I think they're the 31st and 32nd pitchers off the board, both in that AL Central, so neither has a real big edge there, although I guess Reagans can't face the Royals, although a lot of people like the Royals, so I shouldn't be downing their offense. People like them. But where do you go, Reagans or Bibee, Carlos?
If I don't take Reagans, Nick might have a fit or something. So, no,
you could be in some trouble.
Yeah, but honestly, I'm taking Reagans. I think I love Tanner, and I think he's raw talented. He's amazing, but he is raw yet. So I'm taking the guy that have season a little bit more for the past couple of seasons.
Totally understand that. Eno, Reagans v. Bibee, where are we coming out?
I'm going with Reagans. Bibee has the best pitch out of all of their pitches, I think, in his slider. But Reagans has out pitches, I'm pretty sure. So
he does.
I don't think it's like trying to compare Dean Kramer to Graham Ashcroft or anything. They're kind of similar-ish, but I think Reagan's fastball is better at this velo that he's had it at. I think Reagan's arsenal is wider. And so the only thing I give Bibee is the single pitch. That slider is the best pitch among them. So
yeah, I think that's totally fair to note. Cleveland, again, good development, but I just love Reagans. James, you sweeping it for Reagans?
Yeah, sweeping it for Reagans. Another situation where in a 15-team league, you might be easier to convince me on Bibee because Reagans is just still such a health risk. I think a lot of people, Nick Pollock, might be forgetting sometimes, but the Bibee fastball is kind of like Reagans sitting 98 in the spring. The comment just came across, just that's probably better, especially with the secondaries, like you know said, not really being much worse than Bibee when the fastball might be a lot better.
Yeah. Yep. Totally agree with that. Love Reagans. Definitely want to get that love in there. Bibee's good. If you get, you know, if you lose out on Reagans, taking Bibee, there's nothing wrong with that. But if I got a chance to take either, then I'm definitely going the Reagans route. Let's jump down again, skip this the CSV Musgrove here and go to Hunter Green versus Michael King. And I want to start with you, James, because you had mentioned some love for Hunter's Brown and Green earlier. You weren't able to expound on Green because you focused on the Rays. So I think you're probably going to pick Green. Maybe I'm wrong there, but I'm eager to hear your thoughts on both then if you don't pick Green. Green versus King.
It's just Green. Green can do things on the mound that like not many other human beings can. Similar, Paul, to what you're saying about Ranger Suarez helping you in that run. I think that was 2021 or 22 when you came out. That end of season 2022 run by Hunter Green won me lots of leagues. It was especially in head-to-heads where like a starting pitcher down the stretch can really make a difference. Just
absolutely.
And now he's talking about a splitter and a curveball like to get at lefties. I think Lance Brozdowski, who's awesome, has a video coming out this week about Hunter Green coming out with these new weapons. Just Michael King might do great in that park, and it's a health risk and a workload risk for both of them. But oh my gosh, I'm just dropped something outside my door. Hunter Green, just how many people on earth could just throw 100 miles an hour? I want that. Even though the park is so good for Michael King and so bad for Green,
but he just has such a margin for error. I struggle so much with Green because I love him from a real life standpoint. I want to watch him every single time he starts. I get nervous in fantasy because of the park and because he's still raw. But like you said, he does things that so few pitchers can do that if he clicks, I mean, he can take a Strider type jump, right? Yeah. Like it's not there, but he can do that. And not everyone can do that. Michael King can't do that. Michael King can have a great year. He can't jump to the heights that somebody like Green could. Carlos, Hunter Green versus Michael King.
Oh, Green the whole way. I mean, I've loved him for a while, and I've been burned by him for a while too. But as James said, he has all the things. in place to be a great, great pitcher. It's just a matter of things, you know, clicking the right way. And we're all anxious about this new pitch that he's working on. So that might be what makes him, you know, go all the way up, right? So green all the way.
Absolutely understand that. I like Justin's take in the chat saying he prefers green in DFS where his bad starts just ruin his night and not his season. You know, you can definitely feel more comfortable with that. But again, I understand people taking green because the upside is so rich. Eno, you going to sweep it?
No, I'm going to take King.
Boom. The switch.
Sky Kaltman did an interesting little bit of mini research on Twitter the other day, where he just said, like, hey, take all the guys you think are horses, and they've had, you know, 200 innings, you know, over the last 3 years, average 200 innings. Guess what? They're going to average, you know, 170 this coming season. And take all the guys that you think average or horses that average 180. They're down to 150, 160. Mm-hmm. So I tend to think that guys in this band, King and Green, that there's virtually no difference in terms of innings. All right. Okay. So if I think there's no difference in terms of innings, I'm going to give the park by a mile to King.
Definitely.
In terms of wins, I think it could be even, you know, I think these are both okay.
I
mean, teams.
King, I still think San Diego's a bit better.
Yeah. And then, and then in terms of stuff, yeah, I think it, you know, Green has the sort of wow you stuff, but he does have that smaller arsenal. So I may look stupid because if Green does throw a curveball this year or a changeup, like that could be, you're right, that could be what vaults him into ace like status right away. If he's also thrown the curveball and the change a long time in his career and never really thrown it. You know what I mean? Like he's had it. He's thrown it in the minors. He's done this before. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to games, he just does the fastball and slider. So it's kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it to some degree. I have King like four ranks above Green. So it's not much of a difference, but I'll take King. It has a lot to do with stuff necessarily outside of their control, like their park and, you know, what's going on with that.
Yeah. Totally understand picking King here. Like I said, I struggle with Green actually pulling the trigger in a fantasy draft, but boy, I understand the people that want to stay committed and they don't want to jump off the train for when he finally has the breakout. I've had guys like that before where I just stay committed. Let's get one more in here and it'll be one line from everybody because I want these two injured lefties. Carlos Rodon versus Chris Sale. Both have already debuted in spring. Rodon threw today, threw 48 pitches, 5 strikeouts and 2 2/3. Sale threw, I think, the other day, if I recall correctly. Both are already moving up their board. Where are you going, Eno, Rodon or Sale?
Rodon. I think the upside's better at this point in his career, and the velo was there last year, so I think it's just needs to be healthy to command his pitches better.
Totally understand. James, Rodon or Sale?
I truly like them both. I just think that the Yankees probably have more to lose in the regular season than the Braves, so I think they probably ride Rodon a little harder, and I want that blower upside for workload from him.
And Carlos, finish it off, Rodon v. Sale.
Yeah, Rodon for the sweep. Definitely he's the guy that could bring a better return than Sale at this stage in their careers.
I like hearing that because Greg Martin and I were in a $400 DC, and we just took Rodon after Sale. Sale was really jumped up, so we just took Rodon, and definitely happy about that. All right, that'll do it. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Excellent work there. Carlos, Eno, James, wonderful talking with you. Justin, I don't know if you saw in the rundown, but I took notes on who they all picked for everything. I don't know if you have any use for that, but
I will take use of that when I put it up on the Sleeper in the Bust feed here in the next couple days after I'm done editing all 20 hours of Potapalooza into podcast form. Thank you guys so much. That was fantastic. It was perfect to listen to while I did pitcher projections like Kyle Freeland and Patrick Corbin, which you guys didn't talk about for some reason.
Weirdly. Why didn't we do a Freeland v. Corbin for the machine wing that Eno mentioned?
Yeah. Oh, my God. That was depressing. All right. Before you guys take off, I want to give you a chance to promote yourself. So, Eno, tell everybody where you reached and what you're doing.
I think the funnest thing would be to join us on the live stream on Fridays at noon. is it one Eastern. We got Trevor May on the podcast this year. Love and we're that. Doing kind of like explainery, like things where we go pitch by pitch, and Trevor's giving us all the insight on what it's like to actually implement some of the stuff we talk about. So try us on the live stream. It's on YouTube. Rates and Barrels is the feed. Check us out.
All right. James, why don't you go next?
Just James Shiano on Twitter. Lots of pitcher talk and Mets talk on there. And then Mets the podcast. We actually also had Trevor May on last week, and he accidentally told us about the Rates and Barrels thing before you guys announced it. We were like, I can't put this out yet. And luckily that afternoon, your guys' episode, you said, I was like, all right, cool, publish. I was like, I don't want to break this news. But yeah, it was funny. He's the best.
Carlos.
Just regularly on Twitter, at CA Marcano, and on Baseball Prospectus almost twice a week for the baseball season.
All right. And Paul, finish us up.
On Twitter at Spore, also on Twitch, twitch.tv/Spore. I'll be bringing my Boxes and Bowls series back like three times a week, where I review the box scores in the morning, hanging out, drinking some Red Bull, although I probably need to quit it. I think it's killing me, y'all. I'm going to die from Red Bull. Also, Sleeper in the Bust on Fangraphs with Justin. We'll be back doing our pitching preview part 3 tomorrow. We're getting through it. We're probably going to do 50 episodes on pitchers, but we're getting through it.
Hey, we're making good progress.
I know. You said that yesterday, too, and it is true. We are actually, the outfield one, we took some time on because we had a couple that we had to be shorter with. But, yeah, we're making it through the pitchers, and I love talking pitchers, so I don't even mind if we do 6 episodes.
Yeah, and I'm, I've used a lot of these panels that I'm not on to actually do my starting pitcher projections. I'm 53 deep right now, so
you're moving. You're sticking and moving.
Go. I'm hoping by the time I get to Florida, I'll have every starting pitcher projected out. So,
Justin, I'm about to make you happy. I think I'm about to take TJ Friedl in the Tout Wars draft and hold here.
Absolutely, you should. You guys, I got to jet you out of here. Unfortunately, unceremoniously,